The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private. Trust Ireland's leading private hospitals with locations nationwide, including Dublin, Cork and Limerick.
This is News Talk.
With the US election on November the 3rd, less than 40 days away, Biden is winning the national polls. Meanwhile, Trump has declined to commit to a peaceful transfer of power. Should he lose, or should there be question marks over the result? Now, to talk about how the candidates' campaigns are faring, former US ambassador to the United Nations and author of The Education of an Idealist, a memoir, Samantha Power, is joining us online. Samantha, good morning.
Morning, Pat.
First of all, I should ask you about your reflections on the rather strange beginning to the UN General Assembly, a body you know well from your own experience, and the set piece speeches on video that some of us chose to watch.
I'm surprised to hear that some of you chose to watch. It feels like it's the old proverbial snowflake landing on the Potomac. Sadly, that it's these speeches are happening without the kind of attention they normally get. I think it's a shame because it's the 75th anniversary. You don't get those anniversaries every year. And it certainly was something that Antonio Guterres, the Secretary General, had hoped to use to draw attention to the need for stronger global institutions when we have pandemics and other threats that cross borders. So it seems like it has sort of not really registered very much in the public imagination, which is a shame. I would note one pretty significant development, and I think reflective of the moment we're in, which is President Xi of China making what was seen by many as a pretty dramatic announcement, moving up the time in which China plans to be carbon neutral, moving it to 2060. That is way too late, of course, for the planet, but nonetheless, I think an example of the void that exists and China's attempts, which you see in a whole number of fronts, but to step into that void now that the U.S. has departed leadership on climate, on the pandemic, on so many things. And so it was a big deal for China. Again, we'll need that timeline will need to be moved forward if we're to make a dent in the climate change problem. But I think it was the biggest announcement there so far.
Now, in terms of Trump's support, it's stubbornly high, Democrats would say, encouragingly stable, Republicans would say. And yet national polls are suggesting that Joe Biden is comfortable in most states, and in swing states particularly, he's made some ground, which is worrying to Donald Trump.
I think there are many, many signs actually of something bordering on panic in the Trump campaign. And I want to say that, of course, I will never trust polls fully again after 2016. There are many, many undecided voters still out there. Some of the polls in which Biden's ahead, he's ahead by the margin of error anyway in terms of polling samples. So one can only, you know, go so far in terms of using the current polls as a snapshot. But if the votes are counted, which maybe we'll come to, Biden is competitive in more states than a Democrat has been competitive in several generations. He is up in the three states that Trump won, the critical states, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania, by really quite comfortable margins for this time in the election cycle. And he's competing in places like Georgia, Texas, Iowa, and is either even or ahead in most of the polls in those states. And what that does, Pat, is it requires Donald Trump to spend a lot of money playing defense, where, you know, Trump himself wants to create as many pathways to get to the magical number of 270 electoral college votes. Biden has so many ways he can get there, including in a state like Arizona. Trump is going to have significant trouble, again, if the votes are counted properly, even holding the states that he won relatively comfortably the last time around. So Biden's up, still competing again in states that have never been, quote unquote, on the map this late in an election cycle in a very, very long time. Georgia and Texas, probably the best examples of that.
Now, what you're saying about it, if the votes are counted, there is the possibility, which has been outlined, that on the night of the election, when the polls close, that those votes cast on that day will be counted. And theoretically, Trump could be in the lead, as so many Democrats will have opted for early mail-in voting. Trump will declare victory on the night. And then the mail-in voting will be counted and the Democrats will declare victory for Biden and then Trump will call foul.
I think that that is a scenario. There are many doomsday scenarios, I think, that we can conjure up here. We just went just a couple of years ago through something like this that happened in the state of Arizona when the Democratic challenger to the Republican U.S. senator was losing on election night. And, you know, hundreds of thousands of votes had not yet been counted because Arizona relies a lot on mail-in voting. And it was a striking example of the Republican establishment, the same establishment that has embraced Donald Trump on so many fronts, but respecting the process, ignoring the things that Trump was saying about the election, because, of course, it was in his interest for that state to be won by the Republican. But indeed, you know, a week or two later, the Arizona Senate candidate prevailing by virtue of those mail-in ballots coming in disproportionately for the Democrat. So it's not like we haven't seen this movie before. We just have not seen it on the national election stage. And so part of what you're seeing here, Pat, in the media environment, and it's Democrats who are doing it, but it's not only Democrats, is more voter education than I have ever seen. I mean, more people are talking about voting this year. Trump is talking about it, excuse me, in order to delegitimate the vote, to suppress the vote, to convince people their votes won't count. But professional athletes are talking about it and being very explicit and very nerdy about just how you mail your ballot in and how you don't and so forth. And that's just going to intensify over the next 40 days. So again, Trump's strategy is, darn, I'm losing. I'm down in states I should be up in. I'm competing in states I didn't have to compete in the last time. I'm behind financially in ways I never thought possible, given the number of large corporate investments that are being made in my campaign. My best bet is to delegitimate this thing for two reasons. One, yes, to set me up for raising questions after the fact if I don't do well, but also to keep voters home, to convey, in fact, that I may not recognize the results. So the people who are already disillusioned with the democratic process say, why am I going to bother and take time off work and wait in a 5-hour polling line or risk coronavirus? That's Trump's strategy. So at the same time he delegitimizes, he then tweets, he says mail-in voting, it's fraud. 80 million ballots are unsolicited or going out. There's, you know, lifetimes of fraud that we've seen, which is false. And then he'll tweet, Florida voters, get your mail-in ballots in. I mean, it's almost comical in its lack of self-consciousness and shamelessness.
Now, the untimely death, I suppose, of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, it's not as if she only had to hang on until November the 3rd. The Senate, run by Republicans thus far, would still be in power until the end of the year. Donald Trump himself would be in power until the inauguration on the 20th of January, if he were to be defeated by Joe Biden. But she has passed and she has been honoured. In the meantime, tomorrow he's going to name the potential successor to Ruth Bader Ginsburg, a woman, we're told. A conservative woman, undoubtedly. But that question of, you know, what the Republicans did in Arizona, can you look to the court and expect them to do the right thing by the Constitution rather than doing the right thing by Donald Trump if the election should end up in the Supreme Court?
Well, I think, Pat, there are a couple of reasons that he's jamming this through, ignoring, of course, everything that Republicans did in the context of Barack Obama's effort to appoint a Supreme Court justice in his last year in office, in his second term. The first is, as you say, in the scenario where you get something that is justiciable, is something that can come before a court. And what happened in Florida back in the year 2000 between George W. Bush and Al Gore, of course, is on people's minds. That state race was settled by 530-something votes. And in the end, it came to the Supreme Court on the legal question of how to interpret effectively state regulations and whether or not ballots could still be counted after a certain point. Those kinds of technical questions often have those kinds of technical regulations often have a surprising amount of ambiguity in them. And so there is that scenario in which something goes through the state courts, through the appellate process, and then lands in the Supreme Court. But recall that in the 2000 election, that was pivotal because everything had come down to some hanging chads, some misdesigned ballots, to one single state and the Electoral College allocation from that single state of Florida. If the polls were to stick, if undecideds were not to break in Trump's direction as they did in 2016, so again, one can't take today's polls as prognosis at this point. But in such a scenario, this would not be coming down to one state. I mean, the margins are significant in a number of states. I think Nate Silver, who's our most trusted poll watcher, has Biden's likelihood of winning at this moment, and so much can change, you know, up in the mid 70 percentile. So the second thing that Trump is doing in jamming this Supreme Court justice through in record, what would be record time, is actually trying to use this to score a big win, to look not like somebody who's behind in the polls in states that Republicans have always won handedly, at least recently, but to look like a winning president, not somebody who's mishandled the coronavirus and where we have millions of people who are unemployed, but somebody who has now made the bench look radically different and, from the standpoint of some swing voters, in a direction that they wanted to see. And so you have two of the finalists, for example. One is a esteemed in academic circles, Catholic jurist, very, very conservative, someone who, if Trump can get her onto the court in time, he will say to the base, it's not just those of you in the base who like me and say, yes, you like me in a public opinion poll, go out and register and get other people registered. In other words, to increase the enthusiasm on the Trump side so that more people within that broad category of voters who like Trump still, but that more people translate liking him into voting for him. Because again, the people stay at home in all demographics and irrespective of who they support in this country, unfortunately. The other candidate, so he would use the potential of overturning Roe v. Wade to motivate that base. The other candidate is somebody who's got great standing in the Latina community. And Trump is actually doing surprisingly well compared to Biden among Hispanics. And doing much better this year in 2020 than he did in 2016, at least if the polls are to be judged. So he's actually looking to use the filling of this seat as a factor in trying to reverse his current fortunes in the race itself, well beyond looking ahead to the scenario that you rightly point out could arise, where something actually gets elevated to the court. In terms of the question of whether they would follow the law or project their political bias, I think it really depends on the question that comes before justices. I mean, what looks to progressive-leaning court watchers as the imposition of one's political preferences on a courtroom judgment is always rationalized as following the law, irrespective of what the circumstances are. I think the Roberts Court has surprised some people, and Roberts himself has surprised people on issues related to firing, being able to whether you can fire LGBTQ people. But where they haven't surprised pleasantly, I'm afraid to say, is in the voting rights space. The Supreme Court has consistently, I think, restricted voting rights, interpreted the laws in manners that are maximally restrictive and that have even well before anything arises before them between now and January 2021, they've already made it much, much harder for people to vote in this country in terms of the state restrictions that they've upheld.
Finally, I should ask you, Samantha, that reluctance on Trump's part when he asked a question about the transfer of power and saying, well, it all depends on mail-in voting and all this, you know how I feel about that, blah, 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 blah. I think it was John Bolton who told us on this program that it's already been decided who shall escort him out. It won't be the Marines, it'll be the Secret Service if he refuses to leave. What's your feeling on that? Is it all bluster that he would go quietly?
Trump will never do anything quietly, Pat, that's for sure. And if he is defeated with a sufficient margin where he's not litigating this in every court in the land, and as you say, trying to take it to the Supreme Court, he's going to be thinking, as he always does, about his financial interests, about his personal interests. And so he's going to be setting himself up for life after government, again, to the degree, even psychologically, that he can accept defeat. So he will not go quietly. I think that the key question, and sadly this hasn't been answered in the best way on throughout his presidency, but is going to be whether Republicans are prepared to get real with him, whether Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham and the people who are jamming the Supreme Court justice through are prepared to say it's over. Donald, it's over, Mr. President. I think that those kinds of voices are more important than just about anything. It's not the only thing that's important. There are these legal mechanisms. There are judges, throughout the land, who have different roles in the sort of certification process between now and January 21st. But I think that's going to make a big difference. And it was important yesterday. They can change their minds, but that the Senate came together and by unanimous consent affirmed that there would be an orderly, peaceful transfer of power. So those same Republicans who are jamming this justice through were prepared to send a signal to Donald Trump that that's not going to happen. The same thing happened a month ago when he said he wanted to delay the election. You saw the kinds of people who've enabled all kinds of terribleness from Trump coming out and saying the election will go forward on the day that it has always gone forward. The law is the law. So maybe we can find some hope there. But again, in a close election, I think that's where these kinds of scenarios become very, very risky. And this is where, as a Biden supporter, we really want to see these margins sustained between now and when the votes are counted.
Samantha Power, former U.S. ambassador to the UN, author of The Education of an Idealist, a memoir. Thank you very much for joining us.